Morning. May it please the court, Jim Keitel, Mary Ruth Mann, on behalf of Captain Nelson. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, Your Honor. Okay. Your Honors, I'd like you to imagine that the three of you are seated for the Washington State Bar Exam. And you, Judge Dwyer, have been singled out to receive a significantly more difficult exam than anyone else.
I'm actually certain that happened.
But nevertheless, you passed. In addition to that, you're not told that you're going to receive a more difficult exam. And one of the bar examiners, while you're taking the test, suggests that you take a break, which you do. Go out, get a breath of fresh air. And others are suggested they similarly take a break. They take breaks even longer than the one that you did. But one of the bar examiners finds out you've taken a break. He himself is not a lawyer, but he suggests that you have an attitude problem and that you probably should not be licensed if you need to take a break. So you're denied a license, and you attempt to avail yourself of the administrative law process. You hire an attorney. They gather comparator evidence as to the exams that everyone else received. You're told when you show up at the hearing that you cannot present any comparator evidence whatsoever. The administrative law judge rules against you, affirms the denial of your license. You appeal to the board. While your appeal is pending, the board avails itself of the opportunity to pass a WAC that says that in the future, no comparator evidence whatsoever will ever be admitted into evidence if a person is denied a license. In fact, you can't even discover the evidence under this WAC. No deposition, no interrogatories, no request for production. About a month later, after that WAC is enacted, it's affirmed the denial of your license. You appeal to the Superior Court, where the judge says you've been denied a full and fair opportunity to present your case by not being allowed to present the comparator evidence. You're remanded. And this is Captain Nelson's story. This is what happened to Captain Nelson. So he's remanded. And at the remand, you're confronted with a Dr. Scontrino that the state has hired to do a statistical analysis of all of the training trips. And during cross-examination of Dr. Scontrino, he testifies, and this is when you find out that you, Captain Nelson, have received significantly more difficult training trips than any other trainee. And after those words come out of the mouth of Dr. Scontrino, the administrative law judge excuses him as a witness. Captain Nelson's attorney questions, we've already talked to him. He could stay another 25 to 35 minutes. Nope, he's gone. But what we did get from Dr. Scontrino in his statistical analysis, and this is in our brief at reply brief at page 12, these are analysis that he did of all of the trainees. Everyone that's in green there was licensed. The blue or purple color is Captain Nelson, and you can see his scores. The two at the bottom are Captain Jones and Captain Sweeney. Captain Sweeney is actually number 17. And as the court will recall, Captain Sweeney, as a result of being denied her license in this class, sued the state, got a jury verdict, and the state paid her $6.1 million. Now, remember the scores on here are despite the fact that Captain Nelson had a significantly more difficult training trips than anyone else, per the state's witness. Your Honors, we ask you to reverse the decision. You can't license Captain Nelson. Apparently under the APA, it's not allowed. To remand him after this period of time would be futile. He started out when he was 52. He's 63 years old. Mandatory retirement is 70. It's hopeless. They've taken his time. I ask you to take their decision away. Thank you.
Good morning. Guy Bowman on behalf of the Board of Pilotage Commissioners in the state of Washington. The final order on appeal is what it's at issue today. Now, it's the
that all seems terribly unfair. So why is opposing counsel wrong?
It is not unfair. That's his version of the story. I can tell you that Captain Nelson, and this was litigated extensively over 13 days of administrative hearings. Captain Nelson was provided with the same training regimen, and the same standards were used to train him and evaluate him as every other candidate in the system. Captain Nelson has taken some statistical evidence, numbers, and worked out some mean averages that are not useful at all, because that's not the way the board would review training, trainees to determine whether or not they could safely and independently pilot in the state of Washington on our waters. It's a very important job to make sure that not only can pilots safely.
So you sent the matter back for another hearing where Captain Nelson was able to put on comparator evidence.
Yes.
Allow him to do that.
Yes.
Did that happen? What did the board do with it?
It did happen. In fact, there were 6 days of comparator evidence, 6 days of hearings to address the issue of comparator evidence only. Now,
And did that establish that Captain Nelson had much more difficult routes?
No, it did not. It did not.
Why not?
Why not? Well, I mean, that was.
And what was the evidence?
The evidence was the training programs of all of the comparator trainees. And he claims there were some of his trips were more difficult. The trips that were assigned to the trainees were randomly selected depending on what sort of trips they needed to take. I mean, when you're a pilot, you have to go to several different.
How were the trips available? Are these otherwise on commercial ocean-going vessels that are coming in, and instead of just having a Puget Sound pilot on it, they have an observer and the trainee? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, they always have a pilot, and the trainee is also on board, and the trainee will take the con or control of the vessel.
The universe of those trips that are available.
Yes.
Are not created by the Pilotage Commission, but rather created by the commercial society.
That's right.
Who they send into Puget Sound.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That's completely random, and it's beyond the scope of what the board can do. If someone needs to come into,
the board can't
Anacortes
Han,
or Seattle.
The board can't say to Han Jin, we need a container ship on October 17th for a training run.
That's right. What happens is Han Jin comes in and says, we're going to come to the port of Seattle, and we need a pilot. And that's when someone is dispatched. Now, I know Captain Nelson claims that he was given harder and harder trips. That was one of the things that was extensively litigated during the course of this administrative hearing. And the board, in October of 2007, actually, the Trainee Evaluation Committee, what we call the TEC, looked at some of these issues, and they said, well, are we giving him harder trips? Are we contributing to somehow him not successfully completing this training program? Because up to this point, Captain Nelson had already been in a training program longer than anyone else. They kept giving him extensions. Why? Because it's in the interest of the board to get Captain Nelson through his training program. They spent a lot of time and money to get these trainees trained up, and when someone doesn't pass, it comes up the works. They try to coordinate the training programs with the retirement of pilots so that there's a full roster of pilots available to take these trips. Now, when Captain Nelson claims he has more difficult trips, the TEC says, all right, well, let's look at that. We're gonna evaluate that, and they started giving him less difficult trips, and he still wasn't improving up to the point where 4 months later, they decided they were going to give him a one-month training program with the TEC pilots only, and these are the most experienced pilots that are out there, and he's going to train for 1 month with them only, and he's not even going to be graded or, you know, there's going to be no training trip reports filled out for these trips. He's just going to be able to get his feet under him because they're worried about whether he's, why he is not passing, and they want him to pass. So they're trying everything they possibly can to get him through this program. And as soon as that's done, within the first week of his new training program, he's on a relatively easy run, and he is with one of the most experienced training pilots in the Puget Sound, Captain Croman. And he, according to Captain Croman's testimony, he literally was on the verge of taking out the Pier 86 grain dock over here until he intervened. And the board considers interventions very seriously. That means that someone cannot independently pilot a vessel when there is someone there to have to take control of the vessel to avert a disaster or property damage. When someone is licensed, there isn't going to be someone out there looking over his shoulder. So at that point, the board or the training evaluation committee said, well, Captain Nelson's been in this program this long. He's not improving. In fact, he's actually seemingly getting worse. We don't see how we can get over this issue of him being completely inconsistent and dangerous at times. So they recommended no lessons.
Let me ask a question just for my context. So we've got the commission in it. So it's pilotage in Puget Sound. How far does that go? Out to the Straits? Out to Nia Bay?
It goes out to Port Angeles.
Okay.
That's where they pick
Grace
up the
Harbor?
Buses. Grace Harbor is a different pilotage grounds, but yes, there are pilots there as well.
Same board?
Same board oversees both Grace Harbor and Puget Sound, yes. But
the pilots are differently licensed.
The pilots are licensed in the same manner. They go through a training program.
If you have a Puget Sound license, that doesn't mean you can pilot in Grace Harbor.
That's correct.
Yeah.
You cannot.
Is there anything other than Puget Sound and Grace Harbor, Columbia River or anything?
Columbia River is under the jurisdiction of Oregon.
Okay.
So they handle
just
that.
These two that we're talking
yes.
about.
These are the two
Salish colonies. Sea and Grace Harbor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all the way down to Olympia.
Just trying to get a figure how this all pieces together.
Yeah, it's a very complex waterway system. You know, the pilotage is very important. And safety is very important. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the Puget Sound is the lifeblood of this region. The legislature has enacted laws to make sure that it's well protected. And the Board of Pilotage takes their job very seriously, I can tell you that. Very, very seriously and very professionally. And their general concept there is if someone is, they don't feel 100% comfortable sending someone out there on their own, they're interested in giving them another extension. And Captain Lee testified about that extensively when issues of no days off and other reasons were raised as to why they extended Captain Nelson so many times. They wanted to make sure, as is their statutory mandate, that Captain Nelson was a safe pilot, someone they could trust out there to get the job done, not create any damage. And if they felt that there was any question about that, they were interested in doing an extension, and Captain Nelson wasn't the only one who was extended. There are several, all the comparators along with Captain Nelson that were mentioned in the brief were also extended. And they, over the course of time, they got better. And for that reason, they felt comfortable licensing those people. But Captain Nelson and a couple of others never made it that far. Again, they find this very, this is taken very seriously.
One of the arguments made is that this is in the nature of an arbitrary and capricious standard. The WAC rule has these criteria, but they're so broad, so general, that really the board can kind of put their thumb on the scale and they can choose who they really want.
Well, that is not entirely accurate. The board is charged with making decisions based on substantial evidence. And the substantial evidence is laid out in the brief and was testified to extensively in these 13 days of hearings, was that Captain Nelson was not consistent and that he did not, the board was appropriate in denying him a license, whereas other pilots may have been extended, but they showed improvement. And because of that, they were licensed. There's some level of subjectivity that goes along with this, but everyone is evaluated under the same standards. And this is not something where you can have, 3.0, he passes, 2.0, he doesn't pass. Thank you, Your Honor.
To respond a little further to your question, Judge Varellin, about discretion, in the original hearing back in 2010, Captain Dudley was posed the question, now, is it the position of the Board of Pilotage Commissioners that a member of the commission could use criteria other than those adopted by the board through rulemaking to make a licensing decision? His response, I just said, absolutely. So if what's the criteria?
If the fundamental question, though, is to be a pilot, you have to have good judgment, how are you going to objectify demonstrating good judgment? You're going to give them a driver's exam with a written exam that they're going to know the rules? That doesn't establish good judgment, does it?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. And you're quite correct that this is a challenging position, but it requires fair training for everyone. And their own expert said he got significantly more difficult trips. How is that fair under the law? How can you do that to somebody? Now, they bring up this Croman intervention. I ask you to review the record and see where you find a definition of an intervention. Captain Busich was asked during the hearing, Captain Busich, what have you been taught and trained as a training pilot for the Board of Pilotage Commissioners constitutes an intervention? I don't remember specifically being told what and what isn't. Taking over, I think, would be an intervention. So if we're going to have a fair training program, the people who are doing the training need to have standards so that this court, when presented with this issue, can go, okay, well, I can see what you're doing. But it's not there. Furthermore, if Captain Croman thought that this thing at the grain dock was so important, under their own WACS 363-116-200, there should have been a marine incident report. But there was none. He didn't think he needed to do one. So how significant was it really? Again, I ask this court to reverse the decision of the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both.